Thank you. That was absolutely beautiful. And there could not be a piece of music more appropriate for the sermon this morning. Wanting memories to teach us to see beauty through our own eyes. I know that last week many of you were here and shared in a very lovely service of remembrance, remembering those beloved to you by naming names and lighting candles and planting bulbs. In a little different way, this morning we are continuing our reflection on the power of memory. And it is the season. It really is a seasonal thing. The Christian times to honor all saints and all souls, but also the earthbound season. This time of a dramatic turn from light to darkness, from lush color to a more spare landscape. Many of us feel this as a deeply spiritual season. This changing of the seasons evokes memories. It evokes our consciousness of the cycles of life and death. And I know the dark days ahead are not inviting to many of you. I understand that. But in some ways, I really love these months of winter, end of darkness. I love it as a time to dwell more in my inner life rather than my outer, busy, active, doing life. And much of my inner life and much of yours has to do with memories. So indulge me for just a moment while I tell you a little bit about my beloved Aunt Doris. Although I share this not just as a personal indulgence, but also to invite you to bring forward into your own consciousness memories of ones dear to you. Doris was my maiden aunt. She was unmarried all the years of my growing up, and so she was able to give me more time and attention than the other aunts and uncles who were busy with their own families. Aunt Doris used to say that I was her favorite niece. We both knew that although she had four nephews, I was her only niece. But still, it warmed my heart to be called her favorite. And although I did have other aunts, she was my favorite. Aunt Doris taught me to knit, which I continue to do all these decades later. She taught me to play canasta, which I have not played since I was a child. She not only taught me canasta, she played endless games of canasta and old maid and parcheesi and rummy and sorry and hearts and cribbage. She played those with me and my brothers. Long afternoons. She made scrapbooks with me during the long days of those childhood illnesses which plagued everyone in my pre-vaccination generation. She sang lively, funny songs. Mare's eat oats and doe's eat oats and little lambs eat ivy. Do you know that one? McNamara's band. The one about the states, I don't know if it has a name. What did Idaho, boys? What did Idaho? She hoed her Maryland. Do you know that one? Oh, it's a great song. I loved that. What did Tennessee, boys? She saw what Arkansas saw. We need to revive that. Can we get the choir to work on it? I think it's worth doing for some occasion or other. That was Aunt Doris. That was Aunt Doris. Wonderful memories. She was jolly and she was fun, but she would not tolerate any rudeness or misbehaving. She was Grammy Harrison's daughter, after all. She was a good person. She was a good person. And so I was astonished. I was astonished when my mother told me, many years after Doris had died, that she had spent a year in prison. As a young woman, she worked as a bookkeeper. She had a boyfriend who gambled. She stole for him. Many, many years later, long after I was grown, she married this man. And he abused her. And it breaks my heart to know that and to remember it. Our memories are complicated, aren't they? I have these wonderful memories of my Aunt Doris. And then there is the piece that's a little bit of heartbreak. When my mother told me of Doris's incarceration, I did retrieve kind of a vague memory of a stretch of time when Doris was just unusually absent from holidays and family gatherings. And, you know, they said she was off with friends somewhere. It just seemed strange. I didn't think about it very much at the time, but somehow that memory did stay with me. Just as the memory of that day when Grammy neglected to open the candy dish. And there's no way to know for sure now, but in my heart, I am convinced that that day the family was discussing Doris's plight, which was why nobody was paying attention to the children and the candy dish. I think it really wasn't the candy dish that waited that afternoon in my memory. I think it was the somberness of the conversation and the strangeness of it all. It made an impression. We all have these stories in our lives, stories that have shaped who we are, stories that are alive in us still, stories of people and places and events, in meals and colors and music, in joys and sorrows. To bring these stories to life in our own remembering and as we hand them on to future generations makes our own lives fuller and richer. It makes our lives more coherent and more meaningful. The stories are amusements, but they're so much more than amusements. They are the fabric of who we are. So I call us to honor and to cherish our memories. Burton Carley, in his poem, which Callie read so beautifully a few minutes ago, says, "Perhaps this is the reason for our births, to be the memory for creation." And I chose to include that poem in today's service, not because I really believe that claim to be true, but because it lifts up for us a puzzling paradox. What is the role of memory in the human spirit? What is the role of memory in the fabric of the larger ecology? It's sometimes said that we are made of our memories. But that statement is not as simple as it might seem, and I become increasingly sensitive to the perils of such sweeping statements. So I want to diverge for just a moment, for kind of a caveat. Because those of us who have accompanied friends and loved ones as their memories fade or become faulty can bear witness to the truth that those dear ones are still beautifully human, still beautifully themselves in deep and unchanging ways. One of my longtime, much loved friends has recently moved into a memory care unit. It was a hard transition for her. And there's no question but that many of her memories are lost. But her humanity is not lost. Her value as a human soul is not lost. Her sweet, authentic self still shines brightly. She's always been social and extroverted, and true to that core of who she is, now she attends all the programs in her facility, the music, the games, the outings. She's always been a caring and compassionate friend. And in her new home, she now helps those who need help, comforts those who are sad. That warm and intuitive part of her is still alive and well. Much of her memory is gone, but she is still who she always was. And her life still has purpose and meaning. We are made of so much more than our memories. But while memory lasts, let us learn to use it wisely and well. It's a sacred trust. So I wonder, what do you do with your memories, with stories of your life? How do you hold them? To learn from them, to let them transform you or us, to hand them on to the next generation, this requires some intentionality. So what do you do with your memories? Are they in photo albums, maybe? The old-fashioned kind with thick paper and printed pictures? Or the much more efficient, but maybe not quite as congenial, new electronic kind? Or are you like me, with drawers and boxes full of pictures that will be sorted and appropriately organized someday? Do you tell your stories to your children and grandchildren, your friends and nieces and nephews? I hope you do. I hope you do. There is so much I wish my parents had told me of their lives. So many questions I never thought to ask until it was too late. There's so much I wish Aunt Doris had shared more openly with me. And now there's no one to hand on those lost parts of the story. They're gone. Do you hold your memories in meditation and prayer to deepen them and learn from them? Do you write your stories in journals or notebooks or computer files? Again, I stand here as a model of good intentions, wanting to do this, but not yet acting on that intention. But in January, just 2 months from now, I am going to begin leading a memoir writing group here in this congregation to provide some structure and some discipline for those of us who seem to need it. So maybe some of you will join me in that venture. I imagine that the writing of our stories will be a tender and a mostly joyous process, but also layered and fraught, because the stories are woven of so many strands. They're made of more than people, but for just a little time, let's stay with our focus on the memories of those folks whose lives are woven so intricately with our own. Alice Walker says of the poem I read a while ago that the impetus for the poem came out of my struggle with my great-great-grandfather, the slave owner and rapist, whom I had no intention of admitting into myself. The more I heard him plead like a damned soul to be let into my psyche, the more I denounced him as a white man, a killer, destroyer of the planet, a Wasiku, no part of me, get lost, is essentially what I said. Being a part of me already, however, he couldn't. To cut anyone out of the psyche is to maim the personality. To suppress any part of the personality is to maim the soul. The people who walk through our stories have bequeathed us not only genetic matter, but lessons and legacies. How do we remember them? What shall we do with those memories? How can they inform and shape our lives for the good? Often when we talk about the importance of claiming memories, it has to do with the woundedness of our lives. I've done that this morning with my own story as well as with Alice Walker's. Retrieving and processing those memories are necessary to grow into our own authenticity, to understand and forgive, for our health and healing and wholeness. They are necessary so we can redeem the past, if you will, redeem what was hurtful. Or as George Bernard Shaw put it, if you can't get rid of the skeleton in your closet, you'd best teach it to dance. I think Alice Walker did that well. Descended from a cruel rape, she grew to be a poet of such strength and beauty. She taught that skeleton to dance. Working with painful memories is important work, but I really don't want to linger any longer in the negative, because even more powerful is opening ourselves to our memories and stories to allow all that was best in those moments, in those remembered lives, to flower and flourish even more abundantly within us. All the bravery and sacrifice, and tenderness and integrity that has been bequeathed to us, we can nurture that. We can feed it and let it grow. Remember well. Remember the great gifts that live now in you because of those who went before. Embrace the joy and the love, the creativity and the beauty and the moments of transcendence and passion. I will never be free of the reality that my Aunt Doris loved an abusive man, stole for him, and served time in prison for him. But far more significant than that are my memories of her love for me and my love for her. Her patience, her joy, her generosity, her essential goodness. To remember well is to hold the whole truth of each life in our hearts and minds, keeping open our connection with the one who has died, keeping open our own heart to feel the presence of that other spirit. Sometimes it's even more than that. Sometimes it's really feeling their presence alive within us. Listen to this lovely passage from Wendell Berry's novel, Hannah Coulter. The narrator of the story is describing her daughter's wedding and the powerful presence at that event of the bride's father, who was killed in the war before she was born, and of her grandfather, 2 years now gone. Berry writes, "Ghosts attend such events." I don't know how else to say it. Mr. Feltner, the grandfather, had been dead for 2 years, and Virgil, the father, for 22. You know the ghosts are there when you see as they see. Not as they saw, but as they see. You feel them with you, not as they were, but as they are. All day long, I saw Margaret as her father and her grandfather saw her. I loved her that day with my love, but also with theirs. I have felt this kind of presence. I hope you have too. I don't believe in ghosts or lingering spirits of the dead that are hovering and whispering around me, and yet, my father died more than 50 years ago, and yet sometimes I feel him participating in some of the tender moments of my life. I feel his love and his pride and his quiet integrity, not just as a memory or a concept, but as a presence. I love my children and my grandchild, not just with my love, but also with his. And I speak to you this morning, not just from my universalist heart, but also from his. It's a deep and a lovely thing. To remember is to hold before us the visions and ideals of those who have inspired and empowered and nurtured us, and to let those ideals continue to shape us. Remembering well is remembering in truth, and it's remembering with a willingness to let that truth be transformative. So I want to invite you, in just these few moments before we finish our time together, I want to invite you to a time of centered remembrance. Remembrance of the great gifts that now live in you because of those who went before. So I simply invite you to a time of quiet meditation and memory. To center yourselves and close your eyes and breathe deeply. Sink deeply into your seat. To sink deeply into your breathing. And invite into the quiet warmth of your heart someone close to you who has died, a beloved family member or friend. See his or her face. Hear his or her voice. Remember your moments together. What did you most cherish in this person's life? What quality of being? Imagine that person calling you to live out that quality in your own life, to give continuity to his or her legacy. And invite this beloved person to tell you what they love and treasure in you. Perhaps something they treasured in your time together. Perhaps some quality or gift that has emerged in you in the days and years since this beloved one has died. Let them tell you of their love. Feel yourself held in that love, strengthened and guided by it. To my Aunt Doris, to my father, to a circle of other souls sacred to me, I say, rest in peace. The meaning of your lives is still unfolding. Rest in peace. In me, the meaning of your lives is still unfolding. Rest in peace in me. The meaning of our lives is still unfolding. So may it be.